Okay. If everybody wants to help themselves this page, we're going to very quickly review what we did last night so that we can move on.
Why is it master?
Because I'm a master.
Master chief.
Right. That was the master page, but it got me. We spoke about the Rambam's introduction to his magnum opus, his Yad HaZaka, in which he explains how radical it was historically and halachically for Rebbeinu HaKadosh Rav Yehuda HaNasi to author the Mishnah, because from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbeinu HaKadosh, there was never an organized, standardized, written work for teaching publicly the Torah Sh'bal Peh, but rather every person would write his own private notes. They were not used for public teaching because the teaching of Torah Sh'bal Peh had to be oral, right? That's Torah Sh'bal Peh. However, Rebbe realized that at that point in time in his generation, when the Romans were so powerful and the Jews were dispersed throughout the nations of the world, there was a fear, a serious fear, that the Torah would be forgotten, that Torah Sh'bal Peh would no longer be transmitted properly, and therefore Rebbe made the plunge, of writing the Torah Sh'bal Peh in the Mishnah. And he codified the Mishnah under the law of Eis Lasos Lashem Heferu Sorasecha.
Why is it called Mishnah?
Mishnah is Lashon Shinun, Lashanot, to review. Right? A Mishnah is to review. Mishnah is to review. Gemara has a different meaning. Gemara means to transmit. Now, we gave some other examples of Eis Lasos Lashem Heferu Sorasecha. Who remembers the case of Mishnah that we discussed? Anybody remember that?
Yeah.
Was that with the
that was not the singing. Singing was like
not yet singing.
That was a
Sridei Age. Excellent. But what was the case of Mishnah? I'll give you a hint. It had something to do with salaries. Anybody remember?
Excellent.
According to the law, you're not allowed to be paid for teaching Torah. But the case of Mishnah points out that already generations ago, even before the time of the Rambam, how much more so since the time of the Rambam, keep in mind the case of Mishnah is 3 centuries after the Rambam, people were getting paid for teaching Torah. The reason for that was it couldn't have been otherwise. Otherwise, people would not go into the teaching field and there would be no transmission of the Torah. It would be totally lost. People would be starving and they wouldn't offer to teach. So that's, again, according to the Kesef Mishnah, an application of the rule of Eis Lasos Lashem Heferu Sorasecha. We also mentioned that there are poskim who allowed men to dress up as women, if that would save them from attack, or women to dress up as men. We also mentioned the fact that people would fake that they looked like goyim, right? They dressed up or acted like goyim in order to save themselves. And all this comes under Eid Lasod Lashem. We mentioned the Sridei Age, who allowed what?
The boys and girls to sing together.
Correct, boys and girls to sing together. You remember the name of the organization?
Thank you.
And it was called Yeshurun first.
Correct, excellent. Yeshurun in France and Ezra in Germany. And then Ezra was replanted here in Israel. A lot of German Jews came to settle the land of Israel. And they formed a youth organization called Ezra. Today, Ezra already is shying away from the Sridei Age Center, but in its time, the Sridei Age was a very, very critical heter, and he writes that Eid Lasot Lashem Eferu Torah Tech. We also quoted the Chazon Ish, who speaks about teaching Torah to women who are not necessarily dressed in the most proper way. They're lacking in tzniut, but he says Eid Lasot Lashem Eferu Torah Tech. I'd like to discuss with you later on today the possibility of teaching Torah to women on the highest level for Eid Lasot Lashem under that principle.
How would that possibly be Eid Lasot Lashem?
So remind me, if you don't mind, a little bit later, because you don't know what was going on with the women folk about 100 years ago. So, but I don't want to go out of order. I'd rather present to you the question of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and Emesli Yaakov. It's a very complicated question. He goes through many different points of how the Torah is meant to be transmitted. Number one, according to the Mishnah in Avos, at the age of 5, and from the age of 5 till the age of 10, the child is to be taught Mikra. Do you remember that? From the age of 10 till the age of 15, the child is to be taught what?
Mishnah.
How you doing?
15 Gemara.
And now only at the age of 15 do we start learning Gemara. All right? Now we believe, as any Jew who's committed to the tenets of our faith, that the Torah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu was exactly the same Torah that we observe today. And that Moshe and Ezra and Hillel and Nasi and the Rambam and the Rabbah, they all took the same Esrog that we take today. They all blew the same shofar that we take today and blow today. And they all wear the same tefillin that we wear today. And tzitzis and mezuzah and everything. So nothing has changed over the years. That's the beauty of the Torah, that the transmission and the tradition of Torah observance has been maintained and has been preserved over the course of thousands of years. But yet when it comes to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, all of a sudden we find every generation there's a nuance and a change, and sometimes it's more than just the nuance, it's a radical, radical change. He says, for example, take a look originally who taught Torah, who was responsible for the passing of Torah to the next generation. The father. The Torah says that explicitly, v'limadetem osam. And the Gemara says, atem, meaning the fathers. But yet, the situation deteriorated, there were no fathers around, or very few, who were actually teaching their sons Torah. So they made a takana. And that takana was to set up Melamde Tinokos where and which city?
Yerushalayim.
Excellent. I'm impressed. Does anybody remember the pasuk for that?
Kibitzion.
Excellent. So again, what happened? If your father would take you up to Yerushalayim, so you got a good education. But if you didn't have a father to take you to Yerushalayim, you would be in trouble. So then they went to the next level. They established schools in the major provinces, in the major capital cities, called Pelach u'Pelach. But what age were the youngsters when they came to study in these schools?
16.
Right? They were 16. And it wasn't going too well. It wasn't going too well. And who came to save the situation?
Yeshua ben
Gamla. And he established. So I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed. You see, yesterday I was depressed. Today I'm impressed.
I'm sorry.
Okay. So Yeshua ben Gamla. Yeah.
But you can be impressed.
Speak a little louder.
He said, "Vila Temo Sam." So, how do you, can't that encompass everyone? In other words, if it's like Robin, it could mean, boys and girls, right?
You don't want anybody to touch.
Well, no, it says v'shinan tam levan mecha. That's a different
Gotcha.
Yeah,
okay. Gotcha.
Okay, so what did Yoshua ben Gamla do? Okay, what did Yoshua ben Gamla do?
He established schools.
Okay, and what are those schools called?
They are called Beit
Knesset.
Joking.
They are called Tashbar. What's Tashbar?
That means it's...
Excellent, Tinokotchel Beit Rabban. And in every single city, that he saw to it, he imposed a tax, an absolute obligation on each city to gather together the funds to pay the salary of a Molame Tinokos. And how old were the children when they came to the school? Some said they were 6 or 7, some said they were even 5 years old. They started getting into it. They were educated from a young age, so they matured in the school system. And it's a radical change from the original
age
formulation of the way the Torah understood the transmission and the obligation to teach Torah. And furthermore, they established schools in which the children would be experts in Tanakh, and then afterwards experts in Mishnah, and then finally learn Gemara. But yet our schools, and this is fascinating, the way Rav Yaakov presents it, he says our schools from the time of the Gedolei HaPoskim, he mentions the Bach and the Shach and all the generations since then, the children are hardly learning Tanakh.
My neck hurts.
They really don't know much about Tanakh. But instead all the emphasis is being placed on what?
Gemara.
On Gemara. He says, I remember, this is very touching, he says, I remember in my day, he says,
well,
that the child who had no yiddish whatsoever in Torah Shabbat Sav, the written Torah, he was already being trained in the learning, the studying of Gemara. And therefore, the Limud Tanakh was muznach. Muznach means it was forsaken. And then he uses a word here in the next sentence. You remember which word I pointed out to you? When he describes what went on for generations in terms of Talmud Torah?
Lidor.
Reformo.
Reformo, correct. Excellent. The reform. He calls it reform. And nothing today even remotely imitates that which went on in the original formulation of this mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And he says, yeah, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is the most important mitzvah that we have. It is shachul keneged kulam. And every generation comes along and makes its innovations in this mitzvah. Basically, the Torah gave us a mitzvah that's ambiguous. It doesn't have a structure to it. It doesn't have rules and regulations. And it's played with and like silly putty. We manipulate it every generation. And not only that, he says, the halacha is that Dvarim Shemiksav, you're not allowed to teach him Balpeh. Dvarim Balpeh, you're not allowed to teach him Miksav. And what do we see, Lemaisa? That every Jew is benching Shechiyano because he published a book. And all because of Eid Masol, Hashem, the whole shinui, the whole change, this reform. He says, I don't know how to make any sense. And that's where we left it yesterday. So today we want to see Rav Yaakov's thesis, which is on the bottom of your left column, of your page.
That's
the Dhamma. I'd like you to follow inside, as I told you many times. I think you have to be grounded in the text. He says Lefi Da'ati. Once he says Lefi Da'ati, he's giving it away. What's he already
in
telling
order
you?
To know.
It's his own opinion.
Ah, Lefi.
And he's really tackling a very, very fundamental question. And yet he has no sources but rather Lefi Da'ati. This is his own insight. And frankly speaking, Rabosa, I would like to rip this apart with you tonight. You know, really analyze this. He says the following. The pasuk says, "V'limadetem osom u'shmartem la'asosom." How would you translate into English the word shmira or shmartem in plural?
Is to guard.
In English,
guard.
Give me a better word.
To keep.
Good. You're getting
like
a lot better.
Shomer Shabbos.
To observe the mitzvah.
Like Shomer Shabbos. Like
so we don't study Torah just as theoretical knowledge. We study Torah as a system of law that's going to control and regulate our lives. It's got to be observed. He says, the Gemara tells us, Gadol Talmud Shemevili De Maisa. The greatness of study is that it brings us to action. I would add another statement in Chazal, which is the flip side of what he said. Ein Amoritz Chassid. You know, if you're ignorant of the law, you cannot possibly be pious. So that knowledge, first and foremost, he says, is a stepping stone to action. To observe the law. He says, Hamaseh, which means the observance of the law, please underline this, Hu Hamagdir es Suras Mitzvah Salmina.
Here's a pen.
What defines the essence of study?
Hamaseh. Action.
Right? It's action. That's the goal.
Hamaseh.
And as we move backwards, we sort of move backwards in the sense that we look at the goal.
Hey,
keep it on the table in case you need it later.
A group thing.
Okay, a group pen. It's a pen for groupies.
If anybody doesn't know, it's the third
and
word.
And believe it or not, it's
the first
works.
Word on the third line.
Okay, I didn't mean to shock you, but I gave you a pen that actually worked. Okay?
Wait, don't worry about it. You need it.
Test for that.
It works, believe me.
Okay. Here, take this sheet. Oh.
Yeah, no, that's not where
it works.
Wait.
Do me just one favor. Don't lose the cover.
That
pen without the cover is absolutely worthless.
That thing is worthless.
It's less than worthless.
Because it gets everything ruined in your bag.
That's exactly what happened. I once had my passport in my American passport here, and I had a pen. And the pen leaked, and it's half my passport went black.
Ah. So now you're from Africa.
Now,
what?
Wow. I was waiting for
that. Did it happen or not?
Mom, tell me a true story.
No, you just said you're kidding.
Get it?
I said I'm kidding. I meant to say I'm not kidding. That's what I meant to say.
Okay. Let's move on.
All right, let's try to move on because I really want to see the thesis of Yaakov, and I have a lot of other things to talk to you about tonight in terms of the conservative movement. Maybe we'll get
to Rabbi, why aren't you giving shiur in next half?
Well, it was such a great experience this half.
Good one.
I'm not exactly a glutton for punishment, okay? I mean, I'm trying to make it to the finish line.
Don't worry, Thursday.
Yeah. No, Wednesday.
Thursday's
our
last day.
Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. I won't be seeing you guys. I mean, I'll see you in the basement on Thursday and hopefully right. For the rest of the summer. But let's go. Can we carry on? You be my helpmate here. You get quiet for me so I can hear myself.
I got this covered.
So you'll make it to the finish line a lot. That's all I want to do. And then I'll bench go.
Be here.
So give me a lead on Thursday. I'll bench go. Alright, so what do we have here? What defines the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? What's the key of keys? The essence of essences, according to Yaakov Kamenetsky. What's the goal of goals of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Everyone?
Masa.
Everything's about Masa.
Okay.
Therefore, Ofen Kiyuma, meaning the way, the structure in which we fulfill this mitzvah and implement it. Omer Hanilman, which means the curriculum. To Rosso Vitochno, its substance and its structure. Everything will be determined and defined in the light of Shmira Samasa. That's how it goes. So again, if you had a banner and you're waving the banner, the words on the banner would be five Hebrew words, according to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Gadol, Talmud, Hamevin, Demasa. Okay? That's Rav Yaakov's perspective. Ulefichok, and therefore, in Shinui Ha'itiv, V'chalifas Adoros, with the passage of time and the change in culture, Mishtanim, what does Mishtanim mean?
Change.
They change. Ofanei Halimud, the tzura, the way and the structure, the approach to the curriculum, to teaching. V'chalkei HaTorah HaNilmadim. We have to reorganize and make a shift in what parts of the Torah should be studied in order to achieve our ultimate goal of what? Of Masa, correct? And now he goes through. Let's go through the history, he says. B'tchila originally, k'shekol Yisrael hayu libudei Hashem, b'kol echad miYisrael hayochol bi'atzmo l'lamed es b'no Torah. If, in the original and ideal state of being, a father, and we can rely on the father, would guarantee that his son would know the Torah that he has to know in order to implement the Masa that he has to implement. So therefore, Vaday, here I want, watch this, guys. This is unbelievable. The Rav Yaakov is now going to do what might just be, I don't know, it depends on your perspective and your prejudice whether you're allowed to do this or not. He's giving you Tame HaMikra. He's going to tell you, in his opinion, why Almighty God commanded the fathers to teach their sons Torah. He says, Vadai, there's no question that the natural and most, you know, the most perfect candidate for teaching Torah is the father. And I don't know if you and I would agree with that, but that's what he claims.
By the Rebbe.
The Rebbe is not. It's the father. Why is the father better than the Rebbe? He says, Vadi Sha'av Hu Hamalamed Hayoser Mukhshar. He is the most qualified person on the face of the earth to teach this kid Torah.
Why?
Ki mi kamo, who better than the father? Yodea Umakir recognizes and knows Ofane Bno Ofi Abno. What's Ofi? That's an important word in Hebrew. You got to learn that.
Oaf is a chicken.
Modern Hebrew.
Character,
personality. Oafy is personality. Who recognizes and appreciates the personality of the child? The father does. He's the makir. Please underline that. Where's that pen going around? And it really works.
Guys, you have it in your pocket. Rabbi, I thought we're leaving this on the table.
Yeah, I don't know why I put it here.
What about the older siblings?
What are they doing?
The oldest siblings.
Dude, pay attention. Stop playing games.
Might be, second best. You know, maybe they should be number two.
What about the mother?
What are we going to do on
that? Excellent question. What about the mother? According to Yaakov, maybe the mother should be teaching Ofi, right?
Yeah.
Who recognized the Ofi of the child?
The Ofni?
Ofi means the personality.
I can't find that.
What's Kishro Notav?
I lost our place.
You're five lines up from before the end of the paragraph.
Ofni?
What is Kishro Notav? Anybody know what a Kisharon is?
Kesher.
Kesher is a knot.
That's what it could.
It's the last.
With a Chav.
Pass the pen next.
With a Chav, Kishro Not means talents. Who appreciates the talents of the child?
This is
a great father. A great father realizes that every one of his children is
talented,
unique, is
like
different. Every child has been raised and nurtured and developed according to his own personal abilities. Okay? And therefore, Eze Inyan Misugal Yotel Litfos Bechadome. In other words, if his child is mathematically inclined, then he can teach him about Kiddush HaKodesh, or he can teach him about a Sukkah Agula. If his child is very, let's say, you know, he's very limited when it comes to math, but maybe he has more of a propensity towards, you know, interpersonal human relations, then you might want to teach him a Masechta like Sanhedrin, about the laws of judges and interpersonal relationships, etc., etc. Know thy child. That's the rule of thumb. And no, know whether your child...
Know thy God.
Say it again?
Better is know thy God.
Better is know thyself.
According to Rav Yaakov, it's know thy son.
Question.
Okay?
It's sort of like a
not Pesach. S-U-N.
Yeah. It's like on Pesach, right? You know, you teach your son according to his knowledge or whatever.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's basically
what I'm impressed. That's a beautiful comparison, right?
It's like the four sons.
The Rambam's language is Lefi Dako Shel Ben Aviv Malam. That's the words of the Rambam. Correct. In the words of Mishle of Sholomel, Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko. You familiar with that pasuk?
Yeah, yes.
World famous pasuk.
Yeah, he knew.
The feed dark according to his like knowledge or portion. Or
right, according to his personality, his abilities, his kishronos, his talents. Right, no two people are the same. That's why is school education such a bomb in a sense?
Because it's everyone's not the same.
That's right. It's standardized. It's uniform. That's not the way you teach a class. But unfortunately, if you have 35 students in a class, right. And how much more so if you go to university? Like for example, I sat in on one of my son's classes in medical school. There were 250 students in the class.
That's quite a lot.
And the professor asked the question, and at that point, my grandson was in class at the age of 5, and it was like a fraction of a second of silence. After the professor asked the question, waiting for some response, and in that fraction of a second, my little Gavriel says, "I don't know." And 250 people break out laughing. But Abel Acharkach, he says, "What happened?" So he says, "Ezinyan Mesugal Yoselitfos." Right? What area of Torah can he understand? Can he comprehend? Can he become an expert in? Abel Acharkach, b'meshach hazman, unfortunately, misrabu amei ha'aretz. And that could be a result of Golus and Diaspora, whatever it is, but the people weren't knowledgeable enough. The fathers could not pass on the tradition because they didn't know the tradition came. Therefore, we got to a situation that if we limit the education of a child to the father, everybody is going to be on the Oretz. We're going to have one generation of ignoramuses after the other. That's all called Doros. Therefore, Skidu Lehoshiv Molamdim. Now, if you appoint teachers, right, who should be the candidate for that job?
Smart people.
Smart people, what else?
The rabbis.
Rabbis, what else?
Experienced people.
Experience, excellent. Yeah. What else?
Based on their characteristics.
They should have
good
educative abilities, right? They should
PhDs.
Be... I don't know about PhDs, but I tell you the truth.
That's for college.
I would leave out the PhD in favor of someone who knows how to deal with children.
Child PhD.
Okay, child PhD. If you, all right, I don't want to get cynical here, but I don't believe for 1 minute the fact that you have a 5 minute cap or dingling from your thing means you're better with children than someone who never even went to Harvard or Yale. I'm not sure if that's what it takes to teach a child. But anyway, so they realized what would be the proper atmosphere for transmitting the love for Maaseh, for Shmirat HaMitzvot to a child, an atmosphere that's suffused with sanctity. Where is that on the face of the earth?
Yerushalayim.
Yerushalayim. Sheshon Ro HaTalmidim. What did they see in Yerushalayim?
Talmidim.
They saw Kohanim, and they saw the Beis HaMikdash, and they saw the sanctity permeating throughout every aspect of Jewish life. If you want to see action, but I mean Torah and Jewish action, then you go to Yerushalayim and watch what's going on here. Again, today we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. V'zev vaday shi'ifal talmidim lismasel l'torosim v'chol libam v'nafsha. And Rav Yaakov says that as a result of the sanctity of Yerushalayim, the atmosphere that they're surrounded in, the children are ready to give themselves and dedicate themselves to the study of Torah with all their heart and with all their soul. But there's only a problem, a logistical problem. Because you can't take young children that come from Tveria and Beersheba and ship them off at the age of five to study in Yerushalayim. So therefore they sent them at the age of 16 and 17 and it wasn't working. The system was failing. And so Yoshua ben Gamla steps up to the plate and he establishes Tashbar in every single city in Israel with young children studying. First, before Yoshua ben Gamla, I skipped a step. They went from Yerushalayim to each Pelach. Pelach, what's the Pelach? Who remembers what a Pelach is?
A small city?
No. Pelach is a cluster of cities. So it's about six. It's a province.
Like it's a ghetto, right?
Right. You know that Canada is divided into provinces, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah. And territories.
And Toronto.
Okay.
Toronto is a city.
Right. So let's say what's Ontario is not a province.
Ontario is the province.
It's a province. Okay. So let's say the province of Ontario. Where would you suggest that we set up a school?
In Toronto, right?
But the only problem with Toronto is if you don't live in Toronto, let's say you live in Vancouver. Where's that gigantic park?
Vancouver.
Vaughan is not that far. You go out of Toronto and you want to go to that Algonquin. What's it called? Algonquin. Yeah, that's like a 2.5 hour drive. You know, and then
Niagara Falls.
Drive.
Right. So if let's say you know, so how are you going to get all the children to come? But what's the advantage, my friends? I understand the advantage of setting up a school in Yerushalayim. But what's the advantage of setting up a school in the Pelach and drawing on many, many cities to bring their children together? He says an interesting chiddush. Rav Yaakov, take a look. He says that if you set up schools in the provinces.
In the territories,
okay. You can get the finest teachers. Why? Because you're drawing from a large population of potential candidates for teaching positions. You can choose the best teacher with the most experience and the greatest talent. But the problem is that didn't last very long because, you know, children were being shipped out at the age of 16 and they were rejecting the authority of the teachers. And therefore, Yoshua ben Gamla steps in.
When was this exactly?
This is about 18 centuries ago. More.
But it would be Ottawa.
It's Ottawa, you have it all.
Okay, maybe in Ottawa. Mitkila yadu kachme hadoros lishtamish b'chol. Rabosai, here's an unbelievable chiddush. Listen to this. Why was it so important? Again, Rabbi Yaakov was really speculative.
Guys, stop talking.
Ottawa's the capital.
Quiet man.
Aaron, Ottawa's the capital. Aaron, you're brazenly talking.
Aaron, Canada is a boo.
That's me, quiet man. Thank you. Why is it so important that the Torah Shebichtav be maintained its integrity and be taught as such and not converted into some sort of by heart learning?
Because it's unlimited.
Yeah, that was the Maharal Prat, correct? But look at Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, he has a whole different take on this. Because again, according to Rav Yaakov, what's the ultimate goal of study?
Maisa.
So where would you think is the last place in the world, in the Torah world, to get Maisa from?
Text.
For the text of the Torah, right? I mean, what do you know from the text of the Torah? You know nothing, right?
That's why you have art school.
Oh,
God.
You know, you look at the other examples.
Good line, Sam.
So listen to this. Rav Yaakov holds that at that time in history, they can derive unbelievable things from the written Torah that we don't know how to do today. Look at that. He says, Yadu, at that time, the Chachamim of those generations, they knew to use the Midosh HaTorah Nidreshes for him, the 13 principles that are called, again, in fancy English, hermeneutic principles, to derive halacha from the Psukim. And they were experts. Yadu kol mido umido echi nidreshes. They knew exactly how to derive Torah Shebal Peh from Torah Shebal Sad, meaning final halacha from the written Torah. They were experts in chisaros, in chaseros, v'yaseros. You know, some words are written chaser, some are written mole, v'os yasera. They knew if there was an extra word in the possibly drasha number, they would derive new halachas from the extra letter. The gufei halachas nilmad miyud, if there's an extra yud or a vav. And all this they knew because of their ability to look at the text of the Torah and from the text derive halachic conclusions. By the way, the one person who tried to do that in our modern times is the Torah Tamima. Did you ever hear the Torah Tamima?
Yes, I
what he tries to do, he tries to teach you how to read the text of the Torah meticulously and derive Torah Shmal Peh from Torah Shmal Sad. It's not only the Torah Tamima, by the way, it's a whole literature. Rav Shimshel von Hirsch also tried to teach us how to Rav Hirsch tried to teach us also new secrets and keys of how to unlock the mysteries of Torah Shabbat Saf. Alright? Ulaficha, and therefore Haisok paid that the Torah was very, very demanding. No compromises. Shalalumo Torah Shabbat Saf Bal Peh. Because if you read a Bal Peh, you don't see the chaseros and the seros, right? You know, the word is the same. It sounds the same phonetically,
right, exactly.
But it's written differently. The only person who was allowed to study Torah Shmosav Bal Peh was the sumo. Who's the sumo?
A blind person.
Mishum Eis Lasos. This is the only point in the entire article that, to my understanding, that Rav Yaakov exercises the Eis Lasos Lashem Eferi Sorsecha only with regard to a blind person, because he has no other way of studying Torah. Maybe they didn't have Braille in those days, I don't know. Ulehebe. And now let's look at the other side of the coin. Dvar Shabal Peh. Why was the oral Torah transmitted mi peh la'ozen, from mouth to ear, al yidei Rav l'Talmud, v'rak ha'malamed atzmo, ha'yakosev v'yatzo megilo starim? Do you remember we discussed this?
Yeah.
That he would write notes, but they were hidden and concealed, classified information.
Still knows to himself.
Right. Hashmuas ha'chados shishomi rabosov, he would look into those notes himself, because when he looked at the written word, he would remind himself, by his zokor as a memory device, to jolt his memory, Mashashama Mirabo Bal Peh. But he would never offer that writing, his personal notes, as a public conduit for the study of Torah. Why? Ki mihu sheyachol edadek besignon ubalashan. What human being is capable of being so careful about the style and choice of words in his language, as to reach the apex, the climax, if somebody else would look at it, to derive by meticulous reading, who could possibly achieve that greatness in literary talent to write the oral Torah down in such a way that people could read it and understand it in its full glory and its depth? There was no person who could write it in such a meticulous way. And until who came along?
Yeshua ben Gamla.
No.
Okay,
yeah. You guys are spacing out.
Sorry.
Who was the first to write a public text? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Achachibra, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Chibra, Mishnah. We're on the second column now, if you want to follow me on the left side. And why did he do so? Because people were no longer mastering the Torah knowledge as they would, because of all the tzaras that the people of Israel faced. And he was able to do the magical trick with incredible talent of writing something bedigduk gadol in such meticulous way, where the language was so perfect and his choice of words, never an extra word. I just learned the Mishnah with Andrew before the Beis Medrash, where there were two extra words of the Mishnah, and the Gemara derives a whole fantastical conclusion from the fact that Rebbe added two words that were superfluous at the face of it. Bidigdut Lashona. And may us, from the time of Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, Kfar Hiskila Torah Shebal Peh. There's a printing error there. You see a typo? On line 4 it should say Kfar Hiskila, it should say. Torah Shebal Peh Lidchok Radli Torah Shebal Sah. Now the oral tradition took over and pushed out the Torah Shebal Sah. because Torah Shabbat was no longer a valid, viable method of transmitting halacha, maisa, and shmiras ha-maisa. Sheskilu l'shtamish par b'svaros. Now they started utilizing svaros. By the way, which period in Jewish history is typified by the word svara? Svara, by logic. What major period in Jewish history?
The Enlightenment.
The writing of the Mishnah. Talmud. We're after the Mishnah. After the Mishnah, we begin a new period in Jewish history that's going to last for a couple of centuries until Ravina Ravashi edits the Shas. And that's called the period of Svara. V'naklefamim, only on rare occasions, horu halacha mitokha mikra, did they derive halachas directly from reading the text of the Torah of Sav. Ad, until what happened as a result of this change, of this evolution, nishtakhu legamre gidrei amido shatorim medreshes bam. It fell out of vogue. This whole thing about the 13 principles of which we derive conclusions and halachas from the Torah of Sav, that all got lost. It fell into disuse, into oblivion. And therefore, the Shas had to replace, Torah Shabbat Peh, had to replace the Torah Shabbat Sav in order to derive halachas. So for example, today, if I would come along and open up a Chumash and Paskin a Shaila from the Chumash, they would throw me out on my, on my Ruffus, right? Because you can't do that. You have to derive halachas from Shas, and now from Shas Symposium. And therefore, there was a tekufa called the Amoraim, and from that time and on, after the chasima, the closure of the tekufas Amoraim, we cannot derive halachas from Mikra, only from Mishnah and Gemara. But then the Rishonim came along. That was the next historical period. And what did they do? Shavu men amikros b'tziruf agados chazal hemunos v'adeos hatoranim. There's another part to Torah, says Rav Yaakov. Not just Maisa, but also Emuna. We have to have the right beliefs. So what did they do, the Rishonim? They were able to use Mikra together with Agadah. And Agadah, by the way, incorporates a tremendous amount of literature dating back to the time of Tanoim, which is called Midrashim. And from those Agadahs and in the Shas and Midrashim, they were able to evolve a system of Emuna. And now I'm thinking that he has in mind Rav Sajigon, who wrote Emunas Medeos. He has Albo. What was the name of Albo's work? I forget right this second. It'll come back to me. And then the Rama wrote his Yud Gimel Ikrei HaEmuna in his Akdoma to Perek HaChelek in Sanhedrin. And so we evolved an entire system of Emuna. And then we have another period of time. All this had to be recorded in writing. Not only halachas, but also emunos b'deos, mishumeis klasos. So this is the second time that Rav Yaakov invokes the principle of eis klasos. Nimtzu gam elin nasu lahalachos psukos, and even the fundamentals and tenets of our emuna now become part of halachos psukos. Oh, he mentions Rav Sajigon, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Domeh. It came at shenichtu v'gam elu nasu me'ata mikra v'pchinas aleph beis. This became the aleph beis of mikra. Notice now we have a new mikra that we have to study.
Shnayim mikra.
Right. Chlomar kahachana lavanas torsh v'bal peh haksu v'zmanei v'shum eis lasos. And all this literature is meant to prepare us for our understanding, our comprehension of the Torah Shabbat Peh, which is all written down today. It's no longer oral. It's no longer an oral transmission of Torah. It's now a written transmission. L'ficha kol ikar alimud nishar etzlenu b'Torah Shabbat Peh. The entire focus of all our learning is now on the oral Torah. He, right, is she, namely the Torah Shabbat Peh, hameviya lidei masa, which brings us to action, to observe the Torah. And therefore there's an entire shift of the emphasis of how to teach Torah. U'mechuyavim anu liros shalimud yeh talmud amedu l'dei maisa. We have to strengthen ourselves and dedicate our energies to see to it and guarantee that our study of Torah will bring us l'dei maisa. Shekain he chovas malamim tinokus lamve mechanech osam b'derek tova v'hitzuris tamim. So Rabbi Bosa, in a word, the one principle that generates all these reforms in the system of Torah, in the curriculum of Torah, in the way we study Torah, in Torah Shebal Peh, it's now Torah Shebal Tzav, is Gadol Talmud. How many people think?
But then, how is that? Why are we still learning the sectors about the Kabbalas and stuff?
Excellent question. So I was going to ask a slightly different question, but it's the same. Meaning, my style of formulating the question is a little different than yours, but it's really the same exact question. I was going to ask the following. Chazal say that the greatness of the Jewish people at Har Sinai was Shekdimu Nasa Linishma. And the Beis HaLevi, that was my Rebbe's great grandfather, he was famous for saying that Nasa Vinishma, what's so great about Nasa Vinishma is that the people of Israel understood that the purpose of Torah, the essence of Torah, is not Maisa. First Nasa, give us all the knowledge that we need to implement the mitzvahs. Give me a Haggadah Shel Pesach that tells me exactly when I have to pick up the kos, and when I have to cover the matzahs, and so forth and so on. The how to do it kind of, what do they call those pamphlets, But that's Nasa. We're past that already. Now we're up to Nishma. Now we want to learn the Torah. Not for the sake of Nasa. Ben Torah Mora Lo Hoya V'lo Nivra, Chazal said. Here's an entire parasha Torah never existed. Karbanis Mizmana said. Okay, hopefully the Mikdash will be up there before this coming Sunday, right? But right now it's half a Shas is all the B'chinas Libud as a theoretical knowledge. And therefore, I would suggest perhaps a different approach to the same problem from Yaakov. And I would say that the Torah was deliberately ambiguous about how to teach and how to transmit the Torah for a different reason entirely. And that is the development of the human mind and the way it thinks and the human heart and the way it gets excited. And here we come back to the question that I raised before about teaching Torah to women. Classically, the Torah is opposed to teaching Torah, at least Torah Shebal Peh, to women, and Torah Shebal Tzav is a little ambiguous. Why? So the women were denied education. But things changed.
Why?
And the reason I think things changed is because women were no longer getting excited about Torah and about old Torah life. There was a lack of emotion. There was a lack of enthusiasm. And why? Because what were these women studying? You see, classically, maybe women weren't studying anything. They were in the kitchens and that's it. But things changed drastically. And women were being sent to universities. And they were getting academic knowledge and scientific knowledge on the highest level. They were reading literature. And therefore, their minds were very trained and very advanced and very developed. So what are you going to tell them now? You have to observe. Do this and do that and do that, like a mechanical robot. They didn't get excited about that. So the women knew more about secular knowledge and non-Jewish knowledge than they knew about Torah knowledge. And so there was another revolution, which Rav Yaakov doesn't even mention here. Because maybe in his world, women were still being denied a Torah education. But today, we have a whole new system. And in the world that we live in today, you have to excite the students about Torah and a Torah life. So for example, if I were to take you guys or other guys in your age bracket and teach you something very mechanical, I would teach you Mishnah Berurah for 12 hours a day. Would you get excited about that?
Of course.
For the first hour.
Yeah, but not for 12 hours a day. It's cut and dry.
Mishnah Berurah.
So Svara, which Rav Yaakov mentions here, is I think the key to develop the mind in a very exciting way in which the human being feels as an individual that he identifies. He is an active participant in the process of transmission of the Torah. He's not just passively sitting down and getting knowledge stuffed into his brain, which from Rav Yaakov's perspective might be fine, because as long as it's Gadol Talmud Amevi L'idei Maisa, so the whole focal point and the emphasis on Talmud is to bring you to Maisa. But I would suggest, from the background that I got, and the education, the orientation that I was perceived, that I was brought up in, is that the Maisa, you don't need Talmud for Maisa. For Maisa, you need a Mishnah Berurah, you need a how to do it kind of thing, give me a class on how to make tzitzis,
Can we make tzitzis tomorrow?
whenever. You speak to Rabbi Friedman, he's the expert on making
sense. I don't know who that is.
But I was saying, you know, that's not going to get you excited about learning when we live in a generation where the mind and the knowledge and the scientific academic world is so advanced and so sophisticated. You could take a course. When I was in college, I took a course in logic. It was a basic course in logic. It was baby stuff. And it was very sophisticated. Imagine that I'd gone on to take more advanced courses in logic that are much more complex. You know, logic has its own symbols. And you could give tens of examples of how sophisticated and developed our knowledge is. So we live in a world where Torah knowledge and the process of analyzing Torah and thinking about Torah, being creative in learning and being mechadish chidushim, has to in some way parallel the kind of advancements that we've made in secular knowledge and scientific knowledge. And so that the study of Torah has taken on a whole different perspective with the emphasis on Torah Shebaal Peh, because in Torah Shebaal Peh, there's so much room for creativity. Now, if I were to develop a curriculum for Torah Shebichsav, it would involve thinking, analyzing, using literary methods, so that we get excited about our understanding of Torah Shebichsav. It wouldn't just be cut and dry. So that's my approach. I think there are a lot of interesting and fascinating chidushim here in Rav Yaakov. He goes really out on a limb to offer his own speculative insights into why the halacha is this and why the mitzvah is that. But at the bottom line is that Rav Yaakov absolutely justifies all these reforms in the transmission of Torah. Okay then? So we'll stop here.
I'll get it. Where is it? Okay, let's. I can get it on your shirt.
Yeah, just go like.
Oh, it's about to crawl down here. Okay.
It's animal cruelty. I find them all over the place.
Here's your pen, Rabbi. Okay.